Okay, so my starting point is the standard model of particle physics, which has provided us with a tremendously successful framework with which to understand most observed particle behavior. Now, the mathematical language of the standard model is quantum field theory, and in the standard model, most of the interactions are sufficiently weak that perturbative calculations can be used to obtain quantitative predictions. Pictorially, this means that we can represent processes with Feynman diagrams. The more complicated the diagram, the smaller the contribution, and so reasonably accurate theoretical predictions can be obtained by just considering the simplest types of diagrams. Nevertheless, it is important to try to extend these calculations as far as possible. The motivations for that are threefold. First of all, these theoretical calculations provide support for the very impressive experimental work being done. For example, some of the calculations that I'll show you in a few minutes are involved in the determination of parameters in the CKM matrix. A second motivation would be the search for new particles or interactions beyond the standard model. In other words, new physics. And in order to determine that an experimental measurement cannot be explained by the standard model, we need to know exactly what the standard model does predict. And sometimes this entails detailed perturbative calculations. Finally, the strategic, mathematical, and computational advances that are required in order to improve a particular perturbative calculation often have ramifications to other problems both within and outside the realm of particle physics. Okay, so the basic process that I'm going to be considering here is the decay of a heavy quark. And this heavy quark will decay into a lighter quark and a W boson. And then the W itself will subsequently decay into leptons or perhaps even into other lighter quarks. Now, while this decay occurs due to the weak interaction, what's important to calculate are the corrections to this decay induced by strong interactions, in other words, QCD. And so we'll have gluon exchanges between the quarks. Now, at leading order, so without any QCD corrections yet, the calculation of this decay rate is just a textbook exercise appropriate to a student. The leading order QCD correction to this, due to one gluon exchange, these calculations have been known for some time now. It's at the next order, so-called alpha squared, with two gluons here. That's where much of the research frontier lies. Now, it turns out that there are two parameters which enter non-trivially into the final result. And those are the mass of the light quark and the invariant mass of the leptons formed from the W. And in units of the heavy quark mass, these two parameters take on values from 0 to 1 so as to define a triangle of parameter space. And so rather than thinking of a specific type of heavy quark decay, we're thinking of a more abstract thing where any particular type of heavy quark decay is just a particular location on this kinematic triangle. And this triangle already takes us then to the heart of the problem with these alpha squared corrections. And that is that it is basically impossible to perform an exact calculation in terms of these two mass parameters. And so, you know, we need a new tactic to try to get a handle on how the different types of decays work. And so what I'm going to show you now is how to do the next best thing. Okay, so first thing is that it's advantageous to reformulate the problem using the optical theorem. And what this means is that we relate the alpha squared decay rate to the imaginary parts of various three-loop Feynman diagrams. And these imaginary parts basically correspond to the different ways that you can cut the diagram in half and put everything on mass shell. So this pipe cleaner, I don't know if it's working or not, but... Oh, that's cool. So from the Feynman diagram, then it's a fairly straightforward process. Apply Feynman rules to translate the features of the diagram into a mathematical expression. And this leads to loop integrals. The loop integral that I've shown here corresponds to the already known order alpha calculation, but it has the features I need. Namely, underlined in yellow, that we can see that this loop integral depends on all of the different characteristic mass scales of the problem. And so unless you think you can solve this loop integral explicitly in terms of all those mass scales, we're going to need a different way around that obstacle. Furthermore, these integrals are littered with ultraviolet and infrared divergences, and so we're going to need to evaluate this loop integral in a non-integer number of dimensional regularization in order to accommodate this. So in order to overcome the obstacle posed by these multiple scales, we can employ the technique of asymptotic expansions. The basic idea is that we take the entire integration space and subdivide it into a number of regions. And within any particular region, the various loop momenta are larger or smaller than some of the characteristic mass scales. And this then allows us to approximate some of the factors in the loop integral with a Taylor expansion. So, for example, if we have a region where, and that's not showing up at all. Which button do you sell? Okay, well, I'll just point vaguely. Suppose that we have a region where the loop momentum K is much larger than a characteristic mass scale M. Then a typical propagator factor that we would see in the loop integral, 1 over K squared plus M squared, we could expand that so that the denominators only depend on K squared. In other words, we're basically converting a massive particle into a massless particle. And as a result of these expansions, even though we pick up more terms than we had before, we've basically been able to convert our original multiple scale problem into a handful of single scale problems. And these single scale loop integrals can be evaluated using well-known integration by parts identities and a lot of symbolic computational software. Having done that, we would then obtain a final result, which comes to us as a series in powers and logarithms of ratios of various mass scales in the problem. So here's a sample result. It has to do with the decay of a bottom quark into a charm quark. And in this case, the relevant parameter, rho, is the ratio of the charm quark mass to the bottom quark mass. Now, I'll say a little bit more about this calculation in a few minutes, but the important thing to note is that we have an exact co-expression for every coefficient in the expansion. And so there are no numerical approximations here in terms of the coefficients themselves. It's just where do we truncate the expansion. Okay, so returning to the kinematic triangle that I showed earlier, this triangle at alpha squared was first explored near the diagonal zero recoil. And zero recoil corresponds to the situation where the light quark is at rest with respect to the original heavy quark. It turns out, though, that a number of phenomenologically important processes involve the opposite part of the triangle. And so this is the context of my work. So the first calculation that I was involved with was basically to try to study top quark decay. And in the limit that we ignore the mass of the bottom quark, then really we're trying to do this by expanding up the vertical side of the triangle from the bottom left-hand corner. And so the alpha squared decay rate was then calculated in terms of such an expansion. And that green dot indicates the actual location pertinent to this particular decay. Now, this is, you know, obviously useful for top quark decay, but it's also connected to other interesting processes. For example, the QED corrections to muon decay are related to the abelian subset of the QCD corrections for the top quark decay. You can also use this top quark calculation to study a number of bottom quark decays to up quarks or strange quarks, such as the electromagnetic dipole operator of the decay B to S gamma, or the semileptonic B decay B to UL nu. Now, this semileptonic B decay, in order to account for all the possible phase space of the leptons, actually involves an integration all along the vertical edge of that triangle. And so this top quark expansion upwards from the bottom provides a nice complement to the zero recoil expansion, which runs downward from the top on that same edge of the triangle. And we can see this in action here Here's a graph of a particular subset of the alpha squared calculation. Running from the left-hand side over to the right, in the thicker line, was the top quark decay calculation, upwards from the bottom corner of that triangle. Going from the right over to the left with the thin line is the zero recoil calculation, downwards from the top corner of that triangle. And you can see that for intermediate values of the parameter omega, which basically says how far up that edge of the triangle we are, that these two expansions overlap completely. And so it's pictures like this which give us a striking visual confirmation of both the success and also the limitations of these individual expansions, that you wouldn't want to have to use one expansion or the other to try to get the entire kinematic range there, that you use them in combination. The next major effort has been to expand along the horizontal edge of the triangle. Okay, and so this just came out about last month, the paper, where it's most appropriate to the decay of a bottom quark to a charm quark in leptons. And so this is corresponds to the result that I showed you about six slides ago. And when you're expanding along this horizontal edge of the triangle, you're really saying that the invariant mass of the leptons is zero. So in order to get the entire decay rate, again, we're going to need to integrate vertically at the location where the vertical double arrow is, because the mass of the charm quark is about a third that of the B quark. And so in order to get a realistic calculation which integrates along that line, we're going to have a lot more complicated equations than we had before. That will be a very difficult problem, but it might soon be within reach. And there's another class of problems which have been calculated recently, and those involve non-leptonic decays of heavy quarks. And so now we're going to have the W decaying into other light quarks, and so now there's more different particles to which these gluons can interconnect. And so it was shown last year that there's a QCD enhancement due to diagrams like this one to the non-leptonic B quark decay rates, and this QCD enhancement has resolved a previous discrepancy in the theoretical prediction of the non-leptonic decay branching ratio with the experimental measurements. Okay, so to summarize here, heavy quark decays provide us with an important class of problems with which to perform perturbative calculations in the standard model, as we have a convergence of experimental, theoretical, and tactical motivations. At order alpha squared, a number of decays have been calculated or approximated as expansions in various external mass ratios, but in the near future, more general calculations of this type will soon be possible. So I'll finish with another particle physics cartoon. Every time I see this cartoon, I see another level to it, so it's kind of a subtle one, but